I wonder what manner of lies they will hurry to pour into his ears, that chaste queen and her finest of knights. Morgaine heard the words spoken low and very clear from somewhere in the crowd, but she couldn't tell from where they came. She thought, perhaps peace is not an unmixed blessing. Without a war, there is nothing for them to do at court, with their usual occupation gone, but pass on every rumour and bit of scandal. But if Lancelot were gone from the court, then would the scandal be quieted. And she resolved that whatever she could do to accomplish that end would be done at once. That night, at supper, Arthur asked Morgaine to bring her harp and sing to them.
"It seems long since I heard your music, sister," he said,
and drew her close and kissed her. He hadn't done this in a long time. "I will sing gladly," she said. "But when will Kevin return to court?" She thought with bitterness of their quarrel. Never, never should she forgive him his treason to Avalon. Yet against her will she missed him, and thought regretfully of the time when they had been lovers. "I am weary of lying alone, that is all." But this made her think of Arthur and her son at Avalon. If Guinevere should leave this court, then surely Arthur would marry again. But it looked not like that at this moment. And should Guinevere never bear a son, then should not their son be acknowledged as his father's heir? He was doubly of royal blood, the blood of the Pendragon and of Avalon. Igraine was dead, and the scandal couldn't harm her. She sat on a carven and gilded stool near the throne, her harp on the floor at her feet. Arthur and Guinevere sat close together, hand in hand. Lancelot sprawled on the floor at Morgaine's side, watching the harp, but now and again she saw his eyes move to Guinevere, and she quailed at the terrible longing there. How could he show his heart like this to any onlooker? And then Morgaine knew that only she could see his heart. To all other eyes, he was only a courtier, looking respectfully at his queen, laughing and jesting with her as a privileged friend of her husband. And as her hand moved on the strings, the world again seemed to fall into the distance. Very small and far, and at the same time huge and strange, things losing their shapes, so that her harp seemed at once a child's toy and something monstrous, a huge formless thing smothering her. And she was high on a throne somewhere, peering through wandering shadows, looking down at a young man with dark hair, a narrow coronet around his brow. And as she looked on him, the sharp pain of desire ran down her body. She met his eyes, and it was as if a hand touched her in her most private part, rousing her to hunger and longing. She felt her fingers falter on the strings. She had dreamed something. A face wavering. A young man's smile at her. No, it wasn't Lancelot, but some other. No, it was all like shadows. Guinevere's clear voice broke through.
"See to the Lady Morgaine," she said. "My sister is faint."
She felt Lancelot's arms supporting her, and looked up into his dark eyes. It was like her dream, desire running through her, melting her. No, but she had dreamed that. It wasn't real. She put her hand confusedly to her brows. It was the smoke from the hearth. "Here, sip this." Lancelot held a cup to her lips. What madness was this? He had barely touched her, and she felt sick with desire for him. She thought she had long forgotten that, had had it burned out of her over the years. And yet his touch, gentle and impersonal, roused her to fierce longing again. Had she dreamed about him, then?
"He doesn't want me. He doesn't want any woman save the queen," she thought,
and stared past him at the hearth, where no fire burned in this summer season, and a wreath of green bay leaves twined to keep the empty fireplace from gaping too black and ugly. She sipped at the wine Lancelot held for her.
"I'm sorry. I've been a little faint all day," she said, remembering the morning. "Let some other take the harp. I cannot."
Lancelot said,
"By your leave, my lords, I will sing."
He took the harp and said,
"This is a tale of Avalon which I heard in my childhood. I think it was written by Taliesin himself, though he may have made it from an older song."
He began to sing an old ballad of Arianrhod, the queen, who had stepped over a stream and come away with child. And she had cursed her son when he was born, and said he should never have a name till she gave him one, and how he had tricked her into giving him a name, and later how she cursed him and said he should never have a wife, whether of flesh and blood, nor yet of the fairy folk. And so he had made him a woman of flowers. Morgaine sat listening, still twined in her dream, and it seemed to her that Lancelot's dark face was filled with terrible suffering, and as he sang of the flower woman, Blodweth, his eyes lingered for a moment on the queen. But then he turned to Elaine and sang courteously of how the blossom woman's hair was made of fine golden lilies, and how her cheeks were like the petals of the apple blossom, and she was clad in all the colours of the flowers that bloom, blue and crimson and yellow, in the fields of summer. Morgaine sat quietly in her place, cushioning her aching head in her hand. Later, Gawain brought out a pipe from his own northern country, and began to play a wild lament, filled with the cries of sea-birds and sorrow. Lancelot came and sat near to Morgaine, taking her hand gently.
"Are you better now, kinswoman?"
"Oh, yes.
It has happened before," Morgaine said.
"It is as if I had fallen into a dream, and saw all things through shadows."
And yet, she thought, it wasn't quite like that either. "My mother said something like that to me once," said Lancelot.
And Morgaine gauged his sorrow and weariness by that. Never before had he spoken to her, nor to any other, as far as she knew, of his mother or of his years at Avalon.
She seemed to think it was a thing which came of itself with the sight. "Once," she said, "it was as if she were drawn into the fairy country, and looking out from there as its prisoner. But I know not if she had ever been within the fairy country, or if this was but a way of speaking."
"But I have," Morgaine thought, "and it isn't like that, not quite. It's like trying to remember a dream that has faded."
"I myself have known it a little," Lancelot said. "It comes at a time when I cannot see clearly, but only as if all things were very far away and not real, and I couldn't quite touch them, but must first cross a weary distance. Perhaps it is something in the fairy blood we bear."
He sighed and rubbed his eyes.
"I used to taunt you with that when you were only a little maiden. Do you recall? I called you Morgaine of the Fairies, and it made you angry."
She nodded.
"I remember well, kinsman," she said, thinking that for all the weariness in his face, the new lines there, the touch of grey in the crisp curls of his hair, he was still more beautiful to her, more beloved, than any other man she had ever known. She blinked her eyes fiercely. "So it was, and so it must be. He loved her as kinswoman, no more."
Again it seemed to her that the world moved behind a barrier of shadows.
It mattered nothing what she did. This world was no more real than the fairy kingdom. Even the music sounded far away and distant. Gawain had taken up the harp, and was singing some tale he had heard among the Saxons, of a monster who dwelled in a lake, and how one of their heroes had gone down into the lake and ripped off the monster's arm, then faced the monster's mother in her evil den. "A grim and grisly tale," she said under her breath to Lancelot, and he smiled and said, "Most Saxon tales are so. War and bloodshed and heroes with skill in battle, and not much else in their thick noddles.
And now we are to live at peace with them, it seems,
Morgain said. Aye, so it shall be. I can live with the Saxons, but not with what they call music. Though their tales are entertaining enough, I suppose, for a long evening by the hearth.
He sighed, and said almost inaudibly,
I think perhaps I wasn't born for sitting by a hearth either.
You would like to be out in battle again?
He shook his head. No, but I am weary of the court.
Morgain saw his eyes go to where Guinevere sat beside Arthur, smiling as she listened to Gawain's tale. Again he sighed, a sound that seemed ripped up from the very deeps of his soul.
Lancelot, she said, quietly and urgently, you must be gone from here, or you will be destroyed. Aye, destroyed body and soul, he said, staring at the floor.
About your soul I know nothing. You must ask a priest about that.
Would that I could, said Lancelot with suppressed violence.
He struck his fist softly on the floor beside her harp, so that the strings jangled a little.
Would that I could believe there is just such a God as the Christians claim.
You must go, cousin. Go on some quest like Gareth's, to kill ruffians who are holding the land to ransom, or to kill dragons,
or what you will, but you must go.
She saw his throat move as he swallowed.
And what of her?
Morgain said quietly, Believe this or no, I am her friend too. Think you not she has a soul to be saved as well?
Why, you give me counsel as good as any priest.
His smile was bitter. It takes no priesthood to know when two men, and a woman as well, are trapped, and cannot escape from what has been, said Morgain. It would be easy to blame her for all. But I too know what it is to love where I cannot. She stopped and looked away from him, feeling scalding heat rise in her face. She hadn't meant to say so much. The song had ended, and Gawain yielded up the harp, saying,
After this grim tale we need something light. A song of love, perhaps. And I leave that to the gallant Lancelot. I have sat too long at court singing songs of love, said Lancelot, rising and turning toward Arthur. Now that you are here again, my lord, and can see to all things yourself, I beg you to send me forth from this court on some quest.
Arthur smiled at his friend.
Will you be gone so soon? I cannot keep you if you are longing to be away. But where would you go?
Pelennor and his dragon. Morgain, her eyes cast down, staring and seeing the flicker of the fire past her lids, formed the words in her mind with all the force she could manage, trying to thrust them into Arthur's mind. Lancelot said,
I had it in mind to go after a dragon.
Arthur's eyes glinted with mischief.
It might be well, at that, to make an end of Pelennor's dragon. The tales grow daily greater, so that men are afraid to travel into that country. Guinevere tells me that Elaine has asked for leave to visit her home. You may escort the lady thither, and I bid you not return until Pelennor's dragon is dead.
Alas, protested Lancelot, laughing.
Would you exile me from your court for all time? How can I kill a dragon who is but a dream?
Arthur chuckled.
May you never meet a dragon worse than that, my friend. Well, I charge you to make an end for all time of that dragon, even if you must laugh it out of existence by making a ballad of it.
Elaine rose and curtsied to the king. By your leave, my lord, may I ask that the Lady Morgain visit me for a time as well?
Morgain said, not looking at Lancelot,
I would like to go with Elaine, my brother, if your lady can spare me. There are herbs and simples in that country about which I know little, and I would learn of them from the country wives. I need them for medicines and charms.
Well, said Arthur, You may go if you will, but it will be lonely here without you all."
He smiled his rare, gentle smile at Lancelot.
"My court is not my court without my best of knights. But I would not hold you here against your will, and neither would my queen."
"I'm not so sure of that," Morgaine thought, watching Guinevere struggling to compose her face. Arthur had been long away. He was eager to be reunited with his wife. Would Guinevere tell him honestly that she loved another, or would she go meekly to his bed and pretend again? And for a bizarre moment, Morgaine saw herself as the queen's shadow. Somehow, her fate and mine has gotten all entangled. She, Morgaine, had had Arthur and borne him a son, which Guinevere longed to do. Guinevere had had Lancelot's love, for which Morgaine would willingly have given her soul. It is just like the God of the Christians to make such blunders. He does not like lovers. Or is it the goddess who jests cruelly with us? Guinevere beckoned to Morgaine.
"You look ill, sister. Are you still faint?"
Morgaine nodded.
"I must not hate her. She's as much a victim as I."
"I am still a little weary. I will go to rest soon."
"And tomorrow," Guinevere said, "you and Elaine are to take Lancelot from us."
The words were spoken lightly, as a jest, but Morgaine seemed to see very deep into Guinevere, where the woman was fighting rage and despair like her own.
"Ah, our fates are entangled by the goddess, and who can fight her will?"
But she hardened her heart against the other woman's despair and said, "What is the good of a queen's champion if he is not away fighting for what seems good to him?
Would you hold him at court and away from the winning of honour, my sister?"
"Neither of us would want that," Arthur said, coming up behind Guinevere and laying his arm around her waist.
"Since by the good will of my friend and champion, my queen is here and safe when I return. Good night to you, my sister."
Morgaine stood and watched them move away from her, and after a moment she felt Lancelot's hand on her shoulder. He didn't speak, but stood silent, watching Arthur and Guinevere. And as she stood there, silent, she knew that if she made a single move, she could have Lancelot this night. In his despair, now, when he saw the woman he loved returning to her husband, and that husband so dear to him that he couldn't lift a hand to take her, he would turn to Morgaine if she would have him.
"And he is too honourable not to marry me afterward."
"No. Elaine would have him, perhaps, on those terms, but not I. She is guileless. He will not come to hate her, as he would certainly come to hate me." Gently she removed Lancelot's hand from her shoulder.
"I am weary, my kinsman.
I am also for my bed. Good night, my dear. Bless you." And knowing the irony of it, said, "Sleep well." Knowing he would not.
Well, so much the better for the plan she had made.
But much of that night she too lay unsleeping, bitterly regretting her own foreknowledge. Pride, she thought drearily, was a cold bedfellow. Chapter 6. In Avalon, the Tor rose, crowned with the ringstones, and on the night of the darkened moon, the procession wound slowly upward with torches. At their head walked a woman, pale hair braided in a crown over a broad, low forehead. She was robed in white, the sickle knife hanging at her girdle. By the light of the flaring torches, it seemed that she sought out Morgaine where she stood in the shadows outside the circle, and her eyes demanded, "Where are you, you who should stand here in my place? Why do you linger? Your place is here. Arthur's kingdom is slipping from the lady's grasp, and you are letting it go. Already he turns for all things to the priests, while you, who should stand in the place of the goddess to him, will not move. He holds the sword of the holy regalia.
Is it you who will force him to live by it, or you who will take it from his hand and bring him down?
Remember, Arthur has a son, and his son must grow to maturity in Avalon, that he may hand the kingdom of the goddess down to his son. And then it seemed that Avalon faded away, and she saw Arthur in desperate battle, Excalibur in his hand, and he fell, run through by another sword, and he flung Excalibur into the lake that it might not fall into the hands of his son. Where is Morgaine, whom the lady prepared for this day? Where is she who should stand in the place of the goddess for this hour? Where is the great raven? And suddenly it seemed to me that a flight of ravens wheeled overhead, diving and pecking at my eyes, circling down at me, crying aloud in raven's own voice, "Morgaine, Morgaine, why have you deserted us? Why did you betray me?" "I cannot," I cried. "I do not know the way." But Raven's face melted into the accusing face of Vivian, and then into the shadow of the old death crone. And Morgaine woke, knowing she lay in a sunlit room in Pellinore's house. The walls were white with plaster, painted in the old Roman fashion. Only outside the windows, far off and distant, she could hear the cry of a raven somewhere, and shivered. Vivian had never scrupled to meddle with the lives of others when it meant the good of Avalon or of the kingdom. Nor should she. Yet she herself had delayed as the sunny days sped by. Lancelot spent the days on the hills by the lake searching for the dragon, as if there actually were a dragon, Morgaine thought scornfully, and the evenings by the fire, exchanging songs and tales with Pellinore, singing to Elaine while sitting at her feet. Elaine was beautiful and innocent, and not unlike her cousin Guinevere, though 5 years younger. Morgaine let day after sunny day slide by, sure that they all must see the logic of it, that Lancelot and Elaine should marry. "No," she told herself bitterly. "If any of them had had any wit to see logic or reason, then should Lancelot have married me years ago." Now it was time to act. Elaine turned over in the bed they shared and opened her eyes. She smiled and curled up next to Morgaine. "She trusts me," thought Morgaine painfully. "She thinks I'm helping her to win Lancelot out of friendship. If I hated her, I could do her no worse harm." But she said quietly, "Now Lancelot has had enough time to feel the loss of Guinevere. Your time has come, Elaine. Will you give Lancelot a charm or a love potion?" Morgaine laughed. "I put small trust in love charms, though tonight he shall have something in his wine which will make him ready for any woman. Tonight you shall not sleep here, but in a pavilion near the woods. And Lancelot shall have a message that Guinevere has come and has sent for him. And so he will come to you in the darkness. I can do no more than that. You must be ready for him."
"And he will think I am Guinevere."
She blinked, swallowing hard.
"Well, then..."
"He may think you are Guinevere for a short while," Morgaine said steadily, "but he will know soon enough. You are a virgin, are you not, Elaine?"
The girl's face was crimson, but she nodded.
"Well, after the potion I have given him, he will not be able to stop himself," said Morgaine, "unless you should panic and try to fight him away from you. I warn you, it will not be all that much pleasure, since you are a virgin. Once I begin, I cannot turn back, so say now whether you wish me to begin."
"I will have Lancelot for my husband,
and God forbid I should ever turn back before I am honourably his wife."
Morgaine sighed.
"So be it. Now, you know the scent Guinevere uses?"
"I know it, but I don't like it much. It is too strong for me."
Morgaine nodded. I make it for her. You know I am schooled in such things. When you go to bed in the pavilion, you must scent your body and your bedclothes with it. It will turn his mind to Guinevere and arouse him with that memory. The younger woman wrinkled her nose in distaste. It seems unfair.
It is unfair, said Morgaine. Make up your mind to that. What we are doing is dishonest, Elaine.
But there's good to it, too. Arthur's kingdom cannot long stand if the king is known a cuckold. When you are wedded a while, since you and Guinevere are so much alike, no doubt it will be put round that it was you Lancelot loved all this time. She gave Elaine the flask of scent. Now, if you have a servant you can trust, have him put up the pavilion somewhere Lancelot will not see it till this night. Elaine said,
Even the priest would approve. I doubt it not, since I am taking him away from adultery with a married woman. I am free to marry.
Morgaine felt her own smile thin and strained.
Well for you, if you can quiet your conscience so.
Some priests say so, that the end is all, and whatever means be used, they are for the best. She realized that Elaine was still standing, like a child at lessons, before her.
Well, go, Elaine, she said. Go and send Lancelot away another day to hunt the dragon. I must prepare my charm.
She watched them as they shared cup and plate at breakfast. Lancelot was fond of Elaine, she thought, fond as he might be of a friendly little dog. He wouldn't be unkind to her when they were married. Vivian had been just as ruthless as this. She hadn't scrupled to send a brother to the bed of his own sister. Morgaine worried the memory painfully, like a sore tooth. This, too, is for the good of the kingdom, she thought. And as she went to hunt out her herbs and medicines, to steep them in wine for the potion she would give Lancelot, she tried to form a prayer to the goddess, who joined man and woman in love, or in simple lust, like the rutting of beasts.
Goddess, I know enough of lust, she thought,
and steadied her hands, breaking the herbs and dropping them into the wine.
I have felt his desire, though he wouldn't give me what I would have had from him.
She sat watching the slow simmering of the herbs in the wine. Small bubbles rose, lazily broke, and spat bitter-sweet essences which fumed around her. The world seemed very small and far away, her brazier but a child's toy, each bubble that rose in the wine large enough that she could have floated away inside it, her whole body aching with a desire she knew would never be slaked. She could sense that she was moving into the state where powerful magic could be made. It seemed she was both within and without the castle, that a part of her was out on the hills, following the Pendragon banner which Lancelot sometimes carried, twisting a great red dragon. But there were no dragons, not this kind of dragon. And Pelennor's dragon, it was surely only a jest, a dream, as unreal as the banner which flew somewhere, far off to the southward, over the walls of Camelot. A dragon invented by some artist for the banner, like the designs Elaine drew for her tapestry. And Lancelot surely knew this. Following the dragon, he was but enjoying a pleasant ride over the summer hills, following a dream and a fantasy, leaving him leisure for daydreaming of Guinevere's arms. Morgaine looked down at the bubbling liquid in her little brazier. Drop by drop, added a little more wine to the mixture, that it wouldn't boil away. He would dream of Guinevere, and that night there would be a woman in his arms wearing Guinevere's perfume. But first, Morgaine would give him this potion, which would put him at the mercy of the rut in him, so that he wouldn't stop when he found he held not an experienced woman and his paramour, but a shrinking virgin. For a moment, Morgaine stopped to pity Elaine,
because what she was cold-bloodedly arranging was certainly something like rape. Much as Elaine longed for Lancelot, she was a virgin and had no real idea of the difference between her romantic dreams of his kisses and what really awaited her, being taken by a man too drugged to know the difference. Whatever it was for Elaine, and however bravely she endured it, it would hardly be a romantic episode. I gave up my maidenhood to the king's stag. Yet that was different. From childhood, I had known what awaited me, and I had been taught and reared in the worship of that goddess who brings man and woman together in love or in rut. Elaine was reared a Christian, and taught to think of that very life force as the original sin for which mankind was doomed to death. For a moment, she thought she should seek out Elaine, try to prepare her, encourage her to think of this as the priestesses were taught to think of it, a great force of nature, clean and sinless, to be welcomed as a current of life sweeping the participant into the torrent. But Elaine would think that even worse sin. Well then, she must make of it what she would. Perhaps her love for Lancelot would carry her through it undamaged. Morgaine turned her thoughts back to simmering the herbs and the wine. And at the same time, somehow, it seemed she was riding on the hills. Neither was it a fair day for a ride. The sky was dark and clouded, a little wind blowing, the hills bleak and bare. Below the hills, the long arm of the sea, which was the lake, looked grey and fathomless, like fresh smithied metal. And the surface of the lake began to boil a little. Or was it but the water in her brazier? Dark bubbles rose and spilled a foul stench. And then, slowly, rising from the lake, a long, narrow neck crowned with a horse's head and a horse's mane, a long, sinuous body writhing toward the shore, rising, crawling, slithering its whole length onto the shore. Lancelot's hounds were running about, darting down to the water, barking frenziedly. She heard him call out to them in exasperation, stopped dead, and looked down toward the water, paralysed, only half believing what he saw with his eyes. Then Pellinore blew his hunting horn to summon the others, and Lancelot put spurs to his horse, his spear braced on the saddle, and rode at a breakneck speed down the hill, charging. One of the hounds gave a pitiful scream, then silence. And Morgaine, from her strange, distant watch, saw the curiously slimed trail where half the dog's broken body lay eaten away with the dark slime. Pellinore was charging at it, and she heard Lancelot shout to warn him back from riding directly at the great beast. It was black, and like a great worm, all but that mockery of a horse's head and mane. Lancelot rode at it, avoiding the weaving head, thrusting his long spear directly into the body. A wild howl shook the shore, a crazed banshee scream, and she saw the great head weaving wildly back and forth, back and forth. Lancelot flung himself from his rearing, bucking horse and ran on foot toward the monster. The head weaved down, and Morgaine flinched as she saw the great mouth open. Then Lancelot's sword pierced the eye of the dragon, and there was a great gush of blood and some foul black stuff. And it was all the bubbles rising from the wine. Morgaine's heart jumped wildly. She lay back and sipped a little of the undiluted wine in the flask. Had it been an evil dream? Or had she actually seen Lancelot kill the dragon, in which she had never really believed? She rested there for some time, telling herself that she had dreamed, and then forced herself to rise, to add some sweet fennel to the mixture, for the strong sweetness would conceal the other herbs. And there should be strong salted beef for dinner, so that everyone should thirst and drink a great deal of the wine, especially Lancelot. Pellinore was a pious man. What would he think if all his castle folk went to rutting? No, she should make sure that only Lancelot drank the spiced mixture,
And perhaps, in mercy, she should give some to Elaine, too. She poured the spiced wine into a flask and put it aside. Then she heard a cry, and Elaine rushed into her room.
"Oh, Morgaine, come at once. We need your work with simples. Father and Lancelot have slain the dragon, but they are both burned."
"Burned? What nonsense is this? Do you believe truly that dragons fly and belch fire?"
"No, no," Elaine said impatiently. "But the creature spat some slime at them, and it burns like fire. You must come and dress their wounds."
Disbelieving, Morgaine glanced at the sky outside. The sun was hovering, a bare handspan above the western horizon. She had sat here most of the day.
She went quickly, calling to the maids for bandage linen.
Pellinore had a great burn along one arm. Yes, it looked very much like a burn. The fabric of his tunic was eaten away by it, and he roared with anguish as she poured healing salve on it. Lancelot's side was burned slightly, and on one leg the stuff had eaten through his boots, leaving the leather only a thin jelly-like substance covering his leg. He said,
"I should clean my sword well. If it can do that to the leather of a boot, think what it would have done to my leg."
And shuddered.
"So much for all those who thought my dragon only a fantasy," said Pellinore, raising his head and sipping the wine his daughter gave him. "And thanks be to God that I had the wit to bathe my arm in the lake, or the slime would have eaten my arm as it dissolved my poor dog. Did you see the corpse, Lancelot?"
"The dog? Yes," said Lancelot,
"and hope never to see that kind of death again. But you can confound them all when you hang the dragon's head over your gate." "I cannot," said Pellinore, crossing himself. "There was no proper bone to it at all. It was all soft like a grub or an earthworm, and it has already withered away to slime. I tried to cut the head, and the very air seemed to eat away at it. I don't think it was a proper beast at all, but something straight from hell."
"Still, it is dead," Elaine said, "and you have done what the king bade you, made an end once and for all of my father's dragon."
She kissed her father, saying with tender apology,
"Forgive me, sir. I thought, too, that your dragon was all fancy."
"Would to God it had been," Pellinore said, crossing himself yet again. "I would rather be a mockery from here to Camelot than face any such thing again. I wish I thought there were no more such beasts. Gawain has told tales of what lives in the lochs yonder."
He signalled to the potboy for more wine.
"I think it would be well to get drunk this night, or I shall see the beast in nightmares for the next month."
Would that be best? Morgaine wondered. No, if all about the castle were drunk, it wouldn't fit her plans at all. She said,
"You must listen to what I say, if I am to care for your wounds, Sir Pellinore. You must drink no more, and you must let Elaine take you to bed with hot bricks at your feet. You have lost some blood, and you must have hot soup and possets, but no more wine."
He grumbled, but he listened to her,
and when Elaine had taken him away with his body servants, Morgaine was left alone with Lancelot.
"So," she said, "how would you best celebrate your killing of your first dragon?"
He lifted his cup and said,
"By praying that it will be my last. I truly thought my hour had come. I would rather face a whole horde of Saxons with no more than my axe."
"The goddess grant you have no more such encounters indeed," Morgaine said, and filled his cup with the spiced wine.
"I have made this for you. It is medicinal and will soothe your hurts. I must go and see that Elaine has Pellinore safely tucked away for the night."
"But you will come back, kinswoman," he said,
holding her lightly by one wrist. She saw the wine beginning to burn in him. "And more than the wine," she thought. "An encounter with death sends a man ready for rutting."
I'll come back, I promise. Now let me go, she said, and bitterness flooded her. So, am I fallen so low that I would have him drugged, not knowing? Elaine will have him that way. Why is it better for her? But she wants him for husband, for better or worse.
Not I.
I am a priestess, and I know this thing that burns in me is not of the goddess, but unholy. Am I so weak that I would have Guinevere's cast-off garments, and her cast-off paramour also? And while her scorn cried no, the weakness through her whole body cried yes, so that she was sick with self-contempt as she went along the hall to the chamber of King Pellinore. "How does your father, Elaine?" She wondered that her voice was so steady. "He is quiet now, and I think he will sleep." Morgaine nodded. "Now you must go to the pavilion, and sometime this night Lancelot will come to you. Forget not the scent Guinevere wears." Elaine was very pale, her blue eyes burning. Morgaine reached out and caught her by the arm. She held out a flask with some of the drugged wine in it. She said, and her own voice was shaking, "Drink this first, child." Elaine raised it to her lips and drank.
"It is sweet with herbs.
Is it a love potion?" Morgaine's smile only stretched her mouth. "You may think it so, if you will."
"Strange. It burns my mouth, and burns me within." "Morgaine, it isn't poison. You do not... You don't hate me, Morgaine, because I will be Lancelot's wife?" Morgaine drew the girl close and embraced and kissed her. The warm body in her arms somehow aroused her, whether to desire or tenderness she couldn't tell.
"Hate you?"
"No, no, cousin. I swear it to you.
I wouldn't have Sir Lancelot for husband if he begged me on his knees."
"Here, finish the wine, sweeting.
Scent your body here and here. Remember what he wants of you. It is you who can make him forget the queen. Now go, child. Wait for him in the pavilion there." And again she drew Elaine close to her and kissed her. "The goddess blesses you." So like to Guinevere. Lancelot is already half in love with her, I think, and I but complete the work. She drew a long, shaking breath, composing herself to return to the hall and to Lancelot. He hadn't hesitated to pour himself more of the drugged wine, and raised fuddled eyes as she came in. "Ah, Morgaine, kinswoman." He drew her down beside him. "Drink with me?"
"No, not now."
"Listen to me, Lancelot. I bear a message for you."
"A message, Morgaine?"
"Yes," she said. "Queen Guinevere has come hither to visit her kinswoman, and she sleeps in the pavilion beyond the lawns."
She took his wrist and drew him along to the door. "And she has sent you a message. She doesn't wish to disturb her women, so you must go to her very quietly where she is in bed. Will you do that?" She could see the haze of drunkenness and passion in his dark eyes.
"I saw no messenger. Morgaine, I didn't know you wished me well."
"You do not know how well I wish you, cousin."
"I wish that you may marry well and cease this hopeless, wretched love for a woman who can only bring you to dishonour and despair."
"Go," she said gently. "Your queen awaits you. If you doubt me, this token was sent you." She held out a kerchief. It was Elaine's, but one kerchief is like to another, and it had been all but drenched in the scent associated with Guinevere. He pressed it to his lips.
"Guinevere,"
he whispered.
"Where, Morgaine? Where?"
"In the pavilion. Finish the wine."
"Will you drink to me?"
"Later,"
she said with a smile. His steps faltered a little. He caught at her for support, and his arms went round her. His touch roused her, light as it was. Lust, she told herself fiercely. Animal rut. This is nothing blessed by the goddess. She struggled for calm. He was drugged like an animal. He wouldn't care. He would take her now mindlessly, as he would have taken Guinevere. Elaine.
Go, Lancelot. You mustn't keep your queen waiting.
She saw him disappear in the shadows near the pavilion. He would go in quietly. Elaine would be lying there, the lamp falling on her golden hair, so like the queen's, but so dim he couldn't distinguish her features, her body in bed smelling of Guinevere's scent. She tormented herself by imagining, as she turned to pace the long, empty room, how his slender, naked body would slide under the covers, how he would take Elaine in his arms and cover her with kisses. If the little fool has but the wit to keep her mouth shut and say nothing till he is done.
Goddess, shut away the sight from me.
Let me not see Elaine in his arms. Writhing, racked, Morgaine didn't know whether it was her own imagination or the sight that tortured her with the awareness of Lancelot's naked body, of the touch of his hands. How clearly she felt them in memory. She went back into the hall where the servants were clearing the tables and said roughly, "Give me some wine." Startled, the man poured her a cup. "Now they will think me a sot as well as a witch." She didn't care. She drank down the wine and asked for more. Somehow it cut away the sight, freed her from her awareness of Elaine, frightened and ecstatic, pinned down under his rough, demanding body. Restlessly, like a prowling cat, she paced the hall, flickers of the sight coming and going. When she judged the time was ripe, she drew a long breath, steeling herself for what she knew she must do now. The body servant who slept across the king's door started awake as Morgaine bent to rouse him.
"Madam, you cannot disturb the king at this hour."
"It concerns his daughter's honour." Morgaine took a torch from the wall bracket and held it aloft. She could sense how she looked to him, tall and terrible, feeling herself merge into the commanding form of the goddess. He drew aside in terror, and she moved smoothly past. Pellinore lay in his high bed, tossing restlessly in pain from his bandaged wound. He too started awake, looking up at Morgaine's pale face, the torch held high. "You must come quickly, my lord," she said, her voice smooth and taut with her own controlled passion. "This is betrayal of hospitality. I felt it right that you must know. Elaine..."
"Elaine? What?"
"She isn't asleep in our bed," Morgaine said. "Come quickly, my lord." She had been wise not to let him drink. She couldn't have roused him had he slept heavily with wine. Pellinore, startled, incredulous, threw on a garment, shouting for his daughter's women. It seemed to Morgaine that they followed her down the stairs and out the doors as smoothly as the writhing of a dragon. A procession with herself and Pellinore at the serpent's head. And she thrust back the silken flap of the pavilion, holding the torch high, and watching with cruel triumph as Pellinore's outraged face was lighted by the torch. Elaine lay with her arms wound round Lancelot's neck, smiling and blissful.
Lancelot, coming awake in the torchlight, stared around in shock and awareness, and his face was agonized with betrayal. But he didn't say a word. Pellinore shouted, "Now you will make amends, you lecherous wretch! You have betrayed my daughter!"
Lancelot buried his face in his hands. He said through them, strangled,
"I will make amends, my lord Pellinore." Then he raised his face and looked straight into Morgaine's eyes. She met them unflinching, but it was like a sword through her body.
Before this, at least he had loved her as a kinswoman.
Well, better that he should hate her.
She would try to hate him, too.
But before Elaine's face, shamed and yet smiling, she wanted to cry instead and beg for them to pardon her.
Morgaine speaks.
Lancelot was married to Elaine on Transfiguration. I remember little of the ceremony, save Elaine's face, joyous and smiling. By the time Pellinore had arranged the wedding, she knew already that she bore Lancelot's son in her belly, and although he looked wretched, thin and pallid with despair, he was tender with Elaine and proud of her swelling body. I remember Guinevere, too, her face drawn with long weeping, and the look of ineradicable hatred that she turned on me.
"Can you swear that this was not your doing, Morgaine?"
I looked her straight in the eye. "Do you begrudge your kinswoman a husband of her own, as you have one?" She couldn't face me at that. And again I told myself fiercely, had she and Lancelot been honest with Arthur, had they fled from court together, to live beyond Arthur's kingdom, so that Arthur could have taken him another wife to get an heir for the kingdom, then I would not have meddled. But from that day, Guinevere hated me, and that I regretted most, for in a strange way I had loved her. Guinevere never seemed to hate her kinswoman. She sent Elaine a rich gift and a silver cup when her son was born, and when Elaine had the boy christened Galahad for his father, she named herself his godmother, and swore that he should be heir to the kingdom if she didn't give Arthur a son. Sometime that year she indeed announced she was pregnant, but nothing came of it. And I think, indeed, it was only her desire for a child and her fancy. The marriage was no worse than most. That year Arthur had to face war on the northern coast, and Lancelot spent little time at home. Like many husbands, he spent his time at war, coming home two or three times a year to see to their lands. Pellinore had given them a castle near his own, to receive the new cloaks and shirts Elaine wove and embroidered for him. After he married Elaine, Lancelot always dressed as fine as the king himself, to kiss his son, and later his daughters, to sleep with his wife once, or maybe twice. And then he was off again. Elaine always seemed happy. I don't know whether she was truly happy, being one of those women who can find their best happiness in home and babes, or whether she longed for more than this, and yet abode bravely by the bargain she had made. As for me, I dwelt at court for 2 more years. And then, at Pentecost of the 2nd year, when Elaine was pregnant with her 2nd child, Guinevere had her revenge. Chapter 7. As with every year, the day of Pentecost was Arthur's high festival. Guinevere had been awake since earliest daylight. On this day, all of those companions who had fought at Arthur's side should be at court, and this year Lancelot would be here too. Last year he hadn't come. Word had been sent that he was in Less Britain, answering a call from his father, King Ban, who sought to settle trouble in his kingdom. But Guinevere knew in her heart why Lancelot hadn't come, why he had chosen to stay apart. It wasn't that she couldn't forgive his marriage to Elaine. Morgaine in her spite had brought that about. Morgaine, who would have had Lancelot for herself, and would stop at nothing to part him from the one he truly loved. Rather than see him in Guinevere's arms, Guinevere supposed, Morgaine would have seen him in hell, or in his grave. Arthur, too, missed Lancelot sorely. That she had seen. Although he sat in his high seat at Camelot, and dealt justice to all manner of men, he was loved, loved far more than any king Guinevere had heard tell of before this. She could see that always he looked back to the days of battle and conquest. She supposed all men were like that.
Arthur would bear to his grave the scars of the wounds he had taken in his great battles. When they had fought year after year to bring peace to the land, he had spoken as if he wished for nothing more than leisure to sit at home in Camelot and enjoy his castle. Now he was never so happy as when he could get some of his old companions about him, and fall to talking of those old evil days when there were Saxons and Jutes and wild Northmen on every hand. She looked at Arthur where he lay sleeping. Yes, and he was still the handsomest and goodliest of all his old companions. At times she thought he was fairer of face and better to look at even than Lancelot, though it was unfair to compare them. One so dark, one so blonde. And after all, they were cousins. They were of one blood. How, she wondered, had Morgaine come into that kindred? Perhaps, indeed, she was a changeling, nothing human at all, but left by the evil fairy folk to do wickedness among mankind. A sorceress, schooled in unchristian ways. Arthur, too, was tainted by that background, though she had gotten him to go often to Mass and to speak of himself as Christian. Morgaine liked not that, either. Well, she would fight to the last to save Arthur's soul. She loved him well. He was the best husband a woman could ever have had, even had he been no high king, but a simple knight. Surely the madness that had seized her was long gone. It was right and fitting she should think kindly of her husband's cousin. Why, it was at Arthur's own will that she had first lain in Lancelot's arms. And now it was all past and over, and she had confessed it and been absolved. Her priest had told her it was as if the sin had never been, and now she must strive to forget it. Yet she couldn't help remembering, a little, on this morning, when Lancelot would be coming to court with his wife and son. He was a married man, married to her own cousin. Now he wasn't only her husband's kinsman, but her own kinsman as well. She could greet him with a kiss, and it would be no sin. Arthur turned over as if her thoughts could disturb him, and smiled at her.
"It is Pentecost Day, sweetheart," he said, "and all of our kinfolk and friends will be here. Let me see you smile."
She smiled at him, and he drew her down against him, kissing her and letting his fingers circle her breasts.
"You are certain what we do this day will not offend you?" "I wouldn't have anyone think you were less to me," he said anxiously. "You are not old. God may yet bless us with children, if it is his will. But the lesser kings have demanded it of me. Life is never certain. So I must name an heir. When our first son is born, sweet, then it will be as if this day had never been. And I'm sure young Galahad will not begrudge the throne to his cousin, but serve and honour him as Gawain has done for me."
It might yet be true, Guinevere thought, surrendering herself to her husband's gentle caresses. There were such things told of in the Bible. The mother of John the Baptizer, who had been cousin to the Virgin. God had opened her womb long after she was past the age of bearing. And she, Guinevere, wasn't yet 30. Why, Lancelot had said once that his mother was older than this when he was born. Perhaps this time, after all these years, she would arise from her husband's bed, bearing again the seed of his son in her body. And now that she had learned not only to submit to him as a good wife must, but to take pleasure in his touch, his manhood filling her, surely she was softened, and all the more ready to conceive and bear. No doubt it was all for the best, when for a time, 3 years ago, she had thought she bore Lancelot's child. But something had gone amiss. 3 months she hadn't had her moonblood, and she had told one or two of her ladies that she was with child. And then, after 3 more months, when she should have felt the first quickening, it had proved to be nothing after all. But now, surely,
With this new warmth she had known since she had been all wakened, this time it would come about as she wished. And Elaine